Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on? Welcome to Knife Talk, podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, anybody interested in knife making, in the business of knife making, or just making, or whatever. It doesn't really matter. You don't have to know nothing. We'll tell you everything you need to know, okay? My name is Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with Mareko Momasi, Momasi Fire Arts. And Craig Lockwood isn't here this week, which is that means that we get to fuck around a little extra more. So without question, this is your nonstop one-way ticket to the best knife-related podcast on this German-infested planet because you've told us. Bye-bye. You've told us. So, guys, Mareko,
yep.
How are you?
Good.
What's going on?
No adult supervision. What do we do?
We're going to fuck around. Let this son of a bitch edit it together. He ain't listening to this part anyway. He'll slap the front on. He'll slap the back on. And then we'll see him next week.
I would just like to point out that I do listen to the show. I don't just slap on the front and slap on the back. Jeez, people.
Yeah.
Good old Craig Lockwood.
Yeah. Craig, you're the man.
We appreciate you. We appreciate him. He's busy. He's a busy guy.
He's busy as hell.
Oh my God! What this guy's got to do on top of having all those kids and children? He's got children. He's got infants. I mean, I got a 19-year-old. You got a 7 or 8 year old.
Yeah.
And he got a fucking infant. And the guy looks older than the both of us combined. I'm a boy. That boy look old.
Yeah. It's just. That's part of it, right?
I guess. You had no choice.
Getting running ragged.
How's your last week? You've been busy.
Week's been busy, yeah. So I just got back from the Sacramento area. I was actually down kind of in the Fairfield-Vacaville area, which is kind of southwest of Sacramento, between Sacramento and San Francisco, doing a private lesson down there with some great guys. We had JB of Labrador Forge and Justin Stinson of Running Man and Rick Elm of DI_knives. And then Nate, who is Justin Stinson's apprentice, who is Aortic Forge. And it was cool. We had a great time. We did a lot of fucking work. We had some long-ass days. The second day was a long day.
Like how long?
I got back to where I was staying at 11:30 at night.
So you guys were working all morning, all middle of the day, and then into the night?
All day. Yeah, and I think... It's just the situation was just that there was kind of a little bit of limited tooling in regard to doing the blade grinding and stuff like that. So I would demo and then the rest of the guys would just cycle through and do everything, but we're only working off one grinder. But we got it done and everybody did a great job and it was super fun. And it's really cool. I always forget, not always forget, but just kind of like for me, the teaching stuff is all, I'm always like so focused on making sure that everything's getting across in a meaningful way and it's making sense to people that I kind of forget about the kind of like the lighthearted half of it where you're getting to meet or, get to know these people better. And be kind of, become part of their lives and part of their path. And there's a lot of value in that. And I enjoy it. And it's cool.
It's tricky to kind of, try to get across everything you're supposed to, but right. At the same time also be, fun. So they get, if you're fun, then mm-hmm. maybe they'll get more out of it.
Yeah.
And that's tricky too. And all of a sudden it's a lot of juggling.
Yeah. And I think it was also while it kind of created a bottleneck, especially around the grinding, in in like kind of like when we were doing the forging portion, all four or all five of us could forge at the same time. But what it was great is like, it kind of allowed, even though it was four people, I was still able to focus just on one person at a time.
Yeah.
When we were doing kind of more of these these complex compound grinds, S grinding, and we all did faceted handles. So we all did the Japanese cowboy style or faceted Western handle style. And there's a lot going on there, right? And so it was good to be able to go a little bit slower and be able to focus on everybody one at a time so that. Rather than everybody grinding all at the same time and just like potential mayhem of like, this is getting fucked up over here, right. And this is getting fucked up over there. I just had one person at a time. So I guess that was definitely a positive. I got to hand it to these guys. Like they kept trucking and they got it all done and they got a lot out of it.
Justin's a good dude.
A good dude. He's a super talented guy. It was cool to watch him grind and just do his work in general. He's a very talented guy, so and it's great to get to know him better as well, but all the guys in general. So yeah, it was fun and fucking holy shit. So I've been to Sacramento once before for the Forge the Table show like 2 years ago, but right. I flew into Sacramento and then you drive east immediately, but when you go west at this time of year it's fucking gorgeous, like farmland, and then it's like mountainy and hilly and stuff because I guess they're kind of considered North Bay area.
Okay.
San Francisco Bay area. And it's so hilly and beautiful over there, and you can see how, like, if you drive up in the Napa, I guarantee it just gets even more hilly and rocky and green. And right now everything's super green because they've been getting a lot of good spring rain. And it's fucking beautiful down there.
Oh, dude, I know all my fucking kid. Well, she's never going to come back to New York. Trust me, she's out in L.A.
Yeah.
And she calls me in the morning sometimes. She wakes up and goes for a walk in the morning, and she tells mm-hmm. me about all the fucking fruit trees that she passes by when she walks. And I'm just like, you know what? I didn't pay for this kind of conversation. Go back to class. I don't need to know about all your banana trees. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. I started yelling at her. I'm like, you really have some nerve calling me up, walking past a banana tree by your campus.
Yeah.
Go back to class. I didn't pay for this. You know, so yeah, California is awesome.
Yeah. But other than that, I'm getting ready. Let's see. What's the next thing? I think the next big thing is getting ready for Blade Show. I got calendars getting ready to start or getting ready to be ordered next week. So people keep an eye out for that. I'm probably going to do the Blade Show Bingo again, which Bingo, our friend Bingo Kendall won last year, which is essentially you bring your past calendars and you get signatures, and whoever gets the most signatures by the various artists that are represented in the calendars, they get a special prize from me. And and then also at Blade Show, I'm going to be part of Blade University talking about a different unique approach to pattern welding using hexagons and on triangles and all this weird shit that I did in collaboration with Will Stelter and Salem Straub and Charlie Ellis and Joshua Prince. And we're all going to be there doing kind of a roundtable discussion about that process and that approach. And then, I wanted to mention one last thing is that June 29th and 30th, I'm going to be teaching in Italy. So if people are interested in doing some learning with me, I think we're going to be focusing on some chef's knife designs work, as well as some of my pattern. What do I call it? It's pattern or principles of material movement and reverse engineering patterns to help people with planning their patterns and understanding how the material is really moving, so that when they're forging, they can make kind of better informed decisions on their process. So if anybody's interested again in doing that in June 29th and 30th, it's going to be just south of Florence at my friend Oliver Goldschmidt's shop. And send me an email. Let me know. We're trying to kind of get our feelers out there and start talking about it now.
So let's maybe we should talk to the Italian listeners of the podcast and speak in their native language. I got this. to our friends from Italy. Ciao, bella. Ciao, bella. Cazzo di faccio. Go. Cazzo di faccio. Mreco mamasi, Italia. Forza. There we go. There you go. Perfect. So there you go. Perfect. So there you go. Alfredo, if you don't get your ass down there, it's going to be schiaffi and faccia.
Yeah, I think Alfredo's not far. So I hope, I'm hoping to see him.
Florence is amazing. I love, that was the first trip I ever did on my own. I, my high school, my still to this day, my best paying job of all time. I used to pick up dog shit on the streets of New York on 62nd, between 62nd and 3rd to park at, to Fifth Avenue. And then I would get up $75 a week for going to all the tree pits and like picking them all, picking out all the cigarette butts and dog shit. And then I clean the famous Park Avenue Islands on Park Avenue from 54th Street to 79th Street once a week. And I would just go on there with like a stick with a spike and a garbage bag. And I did that for $100. So I was making $175 a week for 2 hours worth of work. And after a few years of just, you know, I was a dumb kid. I was buying comic books and cigarettes. It was just like, maybe I should get something to do with something better. And then I ended up going to Europe with my friends. I paid for the whole thing. My family, they're not, they didn't even, and frankly, they didn't even know I was gone. Like, I didn't have to, I mean, that was crazy. They didn't even realize. I went for a month.
Right.
And then we stayed in Florence, and I got to fly. I love Florence. So you're going to, Italy's the best. So.
I've never been across the Atlantic.
Well, you're going to enjoy it. It's going to be nice. And you're going to go see Fingal 2 or no?
Yeah, I am. So we're at right after Blade Show. I get home, we pack, and we get the fuck out of here, and we go straight to Ireland. We're going to be in Ireland for a week and a half. I'm going to be hanging with Fingal, doing some work with him, maybe doing some little get-togethers and such there, and then going scooting over to Italy. And
jeez, look at you.
And we're going to be in Italy for a week and a half, also doing some kind of some collaboration work with Oliver, as well as doing this class and just kind of a little bit of sightseeing, and but nothing too crazy. We don't like being like super tourist. When we travel places, we like to kind of like inject ourselves into people's lives and then be like, let's just like cruise with you guys. Whatever you do, we're going to do that too.
Well, you're going to do, I mean, you're in Florence. You're not going to just like sit in your hotel room. You're going to walk around.
Well, we're going to be staying with Oliver, and so he lives in the country that's about an hour, or sorry, half an hour south.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll get around. You know, Will Stelter goes and visits Oliver somewhat frequently, and he gets around.
Will Stelter, this fucking guy. I mean, little Junior. Junior's going all over the place. Old Junior, he went all over the place. Who gives a shit? What about Will Stelter? Well, it sounds pretty good. It sounds great, actually. And before we get to... what I've been up to and what we're going to talk about, let's just talk about a little of our sponsors, Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. If you are, I just got off the phone with Spence a couple days ago. They have a new temper oven that's dedicated. It's going to make your life a lot easier if you're at that point. It's a great little oven, and definitely go check it out at evenheat-kiln.com. And if you're hardening knives, if you're hardening tools, if you're even a glass blower or you're a potter, they have, Even Heat has all the kind of kilns you're going to need to keep you squared away, especially when you're doing that damaged steel, when you're doing that stainless steel, you're doing the complex steels it needs to hold at a certain temperature. You want to get yourself squared away with an Even Heat. So go to evenheat-kiln.com. Stop playing. Well, that sounds pretty. You know, the crazy part is you're going to be in Italy and Ireland, and I'm going to be in Barcelona, and Craig's going to be, you know, sitting in a hammock playing with his putt in France. I don't know if he's going to be playing. He's going to be playing with his putt. He ain't listening to this. My boy's going to be playing with his putt in a hammock with a Aperol spritz. So we'll all be there at the same time. I think we might be taking a summer vacation. Who knows what the hell's going to happen. But but this week's been, you know, we talk about the business end and we talk about the artist end of this whole thing. And where we're at now is it's putting out new stuff and thinking about next week and thinking about the future and thinking about the bills today and thinking about the bills tomorrow and thinking about the bills next week and investing in people, it's hard. It's super hard. And it's funny because we just finished this collaboration with our friend Elon Hall. We're getting ready to do another one with someone I had a nickname for, but I'm afraid to say it because I just don't want to get back to him. I'll tell you off. I'll tell you when it's all done.
Wait, is that Elon Hall or Seth Rogen?
No, it's not Seth Rogen. I know you wrote Seth Rogen.
Dude, at the start of that video, I was like, I completely forgot that you had that thing going, and I was like, is that fucking Seth Rogen? What the hell?
Well, you know, the funny thing is Seth Rogen is tight with, very tight with Jonathan Porter, Doghouse Forge.
Oh, nice. That's
because
great.
His wife and Jonathan's wife went to high school together, and they're besties. So
yeah.
Seth has a whole stack of Jonathan Porter.
Doghouse.
And I was waiting for Jonathan Porter to say, hey, man, you're poaching my guy. But no, yeah, it happens to be that it was definitely not Seth Rogen, but a lot of people thought it was Seth Rogen. But it was good and it was fine. We're trying to, like, it's a question of we're trying not to do the pre-order for these anymore because I really want to kind of be ahead of things. So we made 10 and then we got a couple left and we're going to take care of them. And then we're going to do another small collaboration with another chef. And then we're working on some another ones with some other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's trying to do little things, trying to gauge what people are buying and where they're coming from. And, you know, who's coming from his people, who's coming from my people, or are there repeat business and where are we going and stuff like that. So there's a lot of, like, analysis and there's a lot of, you know, figuring out what we're going to do. And I said last week we kind of – we hired a PR company for a couple months to try it out.
Mm-hmm.
And after a couple of weeks, this past weekend, I get a text from Allison who works for us and who's fantastic. And she goes, they're not answering back my emails.
Oh my God.
And I said, well, what do you mean? She's like, well, I'm asking questions. They're not answering back. And I said, well, what do you want to do? And she goes, I want to drop the hammer. And I said, fucking AZ, you could drop whatever hammers you want. Tony and I are all for it. You want to rattle cages? You want to drop hammers? You got carte blanche. And the funny thing is right after, like a day after, and there was a point where I'm thinking to myself, all right, well, are we going to fire these people? If they're not, you know, been 3 weeks and they're not returning our emails, I'm not paying for, you know, they got to return our emails. Well, they fucking came through hard, and they actually they sent us an email, and this is what I kind of want to talk about. So they sent me an email last night saying, "Hey, we have this opportunity for you to do an article being written about magnet boards. Do you have any, you know, do you want to contribute to it at all?" And at first I thought, "Why? This is not what we hired these people for." But then the thing is I was like, you know, let's just do some faith in these opportunities, and opportunities present themselves. And what are you going to do? You're too good to do certain things. So I sent them an old article that I wrote that wasn't really used. And then it turns out that it's going to be in a really nice, hopefully, fingers crossed, this morning. They were like, wow, that's really cool. We got it into... I'm not going to even say it because there's a good chance it might not come out, but we were surprised. And the question that it made me think, and I was talking to Allison about it for a while, it's the idea of, and a lot of knife makers are at different stages in the game. And I know that since we started this podcast, I've grown in terms of Fader Knives, in terms of my expectations of this business and what we can and can't do. In the beginning, we used to talk about, I don't give knives away. And these guys, they call you up and they want free knives. And now we're in this position where we have the ability to, you know, it's helping giving knives away, because not only are we getting in front of new people and we're getting new people subscribing to our newsletter and buying stuff, but we're able to deduct the price of that at the end of the year for our taxes. So we have we can, you know, those are all deductions. Now we're really being very conscious of what goes out and not thinking of it like, well, you know, if I give this knife out, what's going to happen? It's the fact of, like, don't be crazy. You know, it's okay. And we'll write it down. And then at the end of the year, we'll deduct it. At what point should we be hoping that somebody helps us? Or are we able to, as business people are getting into business, being able to recognize an opportunity and gamble a little bit? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, do you have a metric by which you decide?
Well, it's all a gamble. You know, being a small business person is all a gamble.
Yeah, but you're not just throwing the dice. There must be a certain amount of calculation before you throw the dice.
We're throwing the dice a little bit. I mean, there are certain people that were just like, you know, we gave a couple knives to a couple guys and these motherfuckers, you know, didn't do anything. Yeah. You know, like, there's two of them who got the knives, loved it, and they were supposed to at least, I mean, we don't send them a contract, but they didn't even send a thank you note to Allison. You know, so it was like there are certain opportunities where, you know, I guess an oyster knife to a guy who I should have known better, because his pictures in his Instagram, he was wearing sunglasses inside. And I said to Allison,
a red flag?
Yeah, because there's only two types of people who wear sunglasses inside: blind people and assholes. So it's like, I mean, you know, that's just the way it is. So, you know, there are certain things that it's a total gamble, and being in small business is a total gamble. Like I used to have a list of people who were buying knives, and then I knew that I had this kind of padding. And now we're done. I mean, there are no custom orders. My slate is clear. I mean, as soon as we get custom orders, we knock them out, and the slate is clear. So I don't even have, like, if I shut the doors today, I don't owe anybody anything. And it's a question of everything's a gamble. And what I'm getting to is with this whole Instagram thing is a lot of people are leaving. A lot of people are selling their tools. I talked to Noah Vachon. He's like, I see so many people selling their grinders on Facebook. Or whatever, eBay, oh, wow. Something like that. And it's like, how do we grow and take advantage of an opportunity? Like, once again, I'll just say it one more time, is the PR company says, hey, can you write a little something for these people who want us to do an article? I could have been like, this is not what I'm paying you for me to have to work. But then I'm just like, if an opportunity is presented to me and these people are presenting me these opportunities, I need to kind of take a gamble and think, yeah, let's just go for it, instead of being a diva and saying, no, that's your department. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it seems like the value that they bring is maybe some connections to these different magazines or websites and stuff like that, that basically act as a door opener, but then you still got to walk through it and you still got to do the work.
But at the same time, a lot of these initial investments are not instantaneous, return on investment.
Right.
Like, I think that we also, as the beginning stages of being a small business person, because I got a message from a guy about like insurance companies. Like, he's having a hard time finding insurance companies. They're just like, look, I don't have a name that's going to, you know, solve your problem. It's a lot of hard work. And I think that there's this expectation in the maker community, that especially the knife making community, that there is going to be an immediate return on investment for almost everything. You know, like,
right.
I did this and nothing's happening. I did three reels and nothing's happening. I did one YouTube channel and I did one video, nothing's happening. And there's this sense of desperation, but the sense of like, in a small business, you have to be a bit of a gambler.
Right. Well, and I think that's where you've been wise in partnering with somebody who has business acumen, because I think it is a character quality, or whatever you want to call it,
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Particular people versus others to grind at it, even though you're getting kicked in the teeth, and keep going. And it's easy for people to feel hurt, or it's too sensitive, or like easy to just give up, throw your hands up and say, this isn't working. For a lot of people, I've come close lots of times, but I've had my wife, thankfully, who's like, what are you going to fucking do? Start washing dishes again? I'm like, no. All right. Let's figure this shit out.
Is that what she says to you?
Yeah.
Straight to the dishwasher she sends you?
Well, no, that's what that's my work experience. Working in restaurants, washing dishes, prepping, cooking. Like, is that what you want to get back? You want to go back to? And I'm like, no. Because I have nothing else to fall back on. I have no college
that's not
education.
True. That's not true. Because you could, if you, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, you if you wanted to, you know, send a resume to like Wusthof as a designer, I bet you would get, you know, I think you'd, you know, something
they don't
like
give
that.
A
I mean,
fuck
there's
about me.
Dude, you think it's all dishwasher for you? You think what, fucking getting a job from Whirlpool? I mean, come on, give a fucking break, dude.
I'd probably get a job stocking shelves at Costco.
Get the fuck out of here. You got far more experience. Doing what you're doing is far more experience than your experience. This is this is a job. What you're doing is a job. And that is experience.
For sure. Well, and I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like you're saying, like Noah and other makers are seeing people like drop, like offloading their shit, like, oh, this isn't working, because they're not getting that instantaneous return. And I think that is part of doing this, not only as for fun and as a passion, as a creative outlet, but if you're going to do it as a business, there's going to be up times and there's going to be down times, and you got to figure out how you're going to ride out those down times.
It's weird because
you're doing a good job with it.
I'm just handling it. But at the same time, as I have more, my experience is the fact that my dad was a small business owner and my sisters were small business owners and I was around for a while.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, we had all sorts of weird things happen in our different businesses that I recognize. And, you know, I kind of commiserate with my sisters because they, you know, I've seen this. So it's like, none of it's foreign to me in that regards.
Yeah.
But I think that I don't think people realize we talk about experience underrated, and everything takes a long time. And the strangest part is, and I think that Josh Smith of Montana Knife Company has really is an exception to the rule in terms of creating a business out of I think that people think it's out of nowhere, but his, you know, this is an incredible rise. It's a meteoric rise of his company, but it's like, it's not, everybody's not like that. And it's just, I think that it's almost like people just assume, well, because they know Josh, because before Josh was Montana Knife Company, he was Josh Smith, Master Bladesmith, and he was part of this community, knew people and did stuff, and Forge and Fire, just like a bunch of everybody's. And now he's like, you know, hobnobbing with Dana White and, you know, Donald Trump, for Christ's sakes. You know, so it's like, you know, he's, you know, created something that I think that people strive for, but at the same time, it's an unfair comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's similar to people hoping that some sort of content they make is going to go viral, and then that's going to like change their whole life. And
right.
It's, like, it's not. That might be exciting for a very short period of time, and then, but then you got to get right back to it, and you got to keep grinding.
I was listening to it was like a little video. It was like a little Instagram meme about podcasts. Okay. And this guy said there are 5 million podcasts or a million podcasts in, you know, online, but 500 of them are 500,000 of them. They don't even do it anymore because people give up. He said, this is the biggest problem with like YouTubers and podcasters is people just give up. And if you can just keep grinding and getting better and still enjoying it and keep getting better, just being around for a long period is almost the experience you need. As opposed to just hoping that one episode, I've had a couple episodes of Full Blast. We've had a couple episodes of Knife Talk where I thought this is the fucking one. This is the fucking one that's going to get some, and nothing happens. Like you got to knock it off and then just get on to the next one. And hopefully the next one's going to be good. And then they keep getting good, but it's the same thing with all these businesses. And I feel as though there's a lot of people who are making complaints and they're not understanding that and not giving themselves the opportunity to realize that being in business is fucking hard. It's really hard.
I got
a friend who was a coffee shop and the fucking it rained and it flooded their whole shop.
Oh shit.
Just didn't have, I mean, they had to shut the shop down for like a few months and then pull a trailer outside on the street to serve coffee outside on the street. The health department closed them down because the place was a disaster. There was mold everywhere. That sucks. And that's part of being in business. And when she didn't just close the whole thing up, she figured it out. And it's just, you know, and now we're in this position where business isn't great anyway, all over the place. So what do you do?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's kind of why I started the knife sharpening, is to have that side hustle that helps to lessen the burden, or not the burden, but the need for my knife making to be the way I make my living. is diversifying where that income is coming from. So I'm not, again, putting all my eggs in the knife making basket. I'm humble enough to fucking sharpen people's beat up piece of shit knives to keep bringing in that cash.
Right.
I think that's also part of it too.
Yeah, but that's like, I mean, that I think that that's part of being in business, is to just try to be, you know, forecast problems and good things and bad things and trying to figure things out. And for us right now, we're in this weird position where when it rains, it pours, but when it's dry, it's dead, you know, and it's like, that's the weirdest part about the knife making game, because like we've said a million times, this isn't like a sandwich shop where no one's coming in and all the produce is going bad. You know, this is like something I sold a knife, you know, that I made 2 years ago, and it's like it was stored away. I just kind of cleaned it up and sent it on its way.
Mm-hmm.
And when business is good, it's great. But when it's quiet, it's like you start to get nervous. What should we do? What are we going to do? And maybe what's going on? How's Instagram affecting us? I got tattoo friends now are saying that they're being suppressed by the Instagram algorithms too. So it's like, you know, I just want to say it's hard out there.
That's hard.
Hard out there for a pimp.
It's hard out there for a pimp.
You know what's not hard, though? Fucking combat abrasives, bitch. Combatabrasives.com, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to get yourself some of them shredder belts, get yourself some of them Scotch-Brites, get some polishing compound, get whatever you need. I suggest, if you're a Kydex person, get some of that purple compound. Our boy Andreas Kalani did a video with combat abrasives a while ago on how he cleans up his Kydex with the compound from Combat Abrasives. You go to combatabrasives.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK15, you're going to get 15% off the whole nine yards. So definitely go check out Combat Abrasives and save yourself a little bit of moolah. You know what I'm saying?
For sure. Yeah, we were using Combat Abrasives actually at this class. Justin is loaded up, and holy smokes, it made such a difference in getting the job done.
There you go.
Yeah.
Look at you. Well, what do you want to do? You want to do questions? You want to just vamp?
Questions.
All right, guys. If you want to send us a question for Knife Talk Podcast, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And that Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram is where you can send us your messages. You can send us your fucking Magna Cartas. Guys, one guy sent me an actual excerpt from the true Magna Carta. Look, guys, do yourself a favor. It's funny for a second, and then I'm just more irritated. So if you're going to write something, try not to write me the Magna Carta, which is super duper long. Just try to edit yourself, and it's easier for everybody. So why don't you read the first one? Go to, like I said, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, or you can DM some of us your questions, your red flags, your listener feedback. Why don't you check this first one?
Yeah, this first one's from Mr. Customs. It says, "Hey, boys. So I'm finally at the point where I'm selling knives at a somewhat consistent basis, and I'm thinking about upgrading some equipment to improve efficiency and the overall product. I'm deciding between an upgraded grinder or a heat treat oven. For context, I currently have a Grizzly 2x72 and a propane forge with a thermocouple. I've only been making knives about 5 months and only get 12 hours a week in the shop, but I take it very seriously, and I'm in it for the long haul. What would you recommend? Thanks again for all that you guys do for the craft and for makers." All right, so
I'm so glad you called him Mr. Customs, because I think it's MRC Customs, but Mr. Customs is such a better name. And if I was this dude, be fucking Mr. Customs, because that is such a better name. Oh, Mr. Customs. Okay. Like Mr. Fantastic.
Mr. Customs. So it sounds like, all right, so machine upgrade. You think a 2x72 or a heat treating kiln?
What did I get first? I remember the way I upgraded was I upgraded first with a grinder, grinder. Yeah, because I was upgrading with a better grinder first. And then pretty soon after they got the grinder, I got the smallest even heat they had. And I still use that even heat. That's the best part about those even heats, is it's not like nothing. They're pretty bomb proof. And any type of replacement, it's the thermocouplers is like $15 and then you just put it in. Not a big deal. I would suggest... Look, there's a lot of people giving up the biz. I keep your eyes open, man. You might be able to get a twofer. You maybe get two for Tuesday, you know? Yeah. I wonder, depending on the knife, if I was doing like bushcraft knives, I think I would, if I had, he's got a 2x72 Grizzly. I think I would do this if I was really trying to be cheap about it. If I was doing bushcraft knives and I wasn't doing long culinary knives, I think what I would do is I would get the heat treat oven and then just try to zhuzh up the grinder, you know, maybe change the motor.
Sure.
Or like try to figure out a way to kind of zhuzh it up if I was trying to be cheap. Because the even heats, you can get the small ones and they're pretty cheap. I mean, relatively priced. And,
right.
You know, and depending on how many knives you're making, you know, you kind of put the, you start to say, all right, I need to sell 10 knives and I can buy this thing. And then you do it that way. You make like a little bucket, a money bucket. What would you do?
Yeah, I think I would agree. I look at guys like Laramie Jackson, who I mentioned last week regarding, you know, the whole dressing stick situation. He is still doing work on a 2x72-inch Grizzly grinder. And he's, I'm sure he would love to upgrade, but he's making it happen. But if you really want to kind of feel super confident and stand behind your work, I think a better heat treat regimen, more controlled temperatures, even though you got a thermocouple in the forge, it's still easy for there to be weird hot spots and stuff like that. And so I think having a kiln would be the way to go first.
Yeah.
And then eventually get the grinder. Because you can still get the grinding work done. Again, it's maybe not the most ideal situation for you, but heat treating is I think incredibly important if you want to have a good reputation for your work, the performance, the durability, toughness, all that stuff.
And you can change materials. Like, yeah. All of a sudden, yeah. You can stock removal Damascus,
oh,
you can
right.
stock removal Damasteel, you can stock removal stainless steel.
For sure.
And all of a sudden, you know, you're able to kind of make it happen with, we have these new knives that we started doing. I'm starting to try to make easy entry knives, like stuff that's like, trying to do under $300, under $250. I'm starting to do these $200 knives. And we just got this steel from New Jersey Steel Baron, and we were able to kind of not, it wasn't a lot of grinding and it wasn't a lot of grinding work, but I used AEBL and I was super glad to have a heat treating oven so I could heat treat them and make sure they're hard. And I was so pissed last night. I ran out of liquid nitrogen.
Oh.
And I was like, I am an idiot. And I got to go down.
Did you even do the sideways move? With the can on the side.
Dude, it motherfucker was empty. And the crazy part is I did a couple knives for this next project. And then last night I was like, if you open the door up, you'll see the smoke will come up and you know you got some in there. Hmm. But there was nothing coming in, and you look in there and it's dry as a bone. It ain't nothing in there. I mean, I can see the bottom. I can see all the bullshit at the bottom.
Right.
So I heat treated everything, these little tiny knives, and then I put them in the freezer overnight. And I tested them this morning. They were 60 Rockwell.
Okay.
So you can figure things. I mean, obviously, for long chef knives, I ain't shoving them in a freezer for, overnight. I'd rather the liquid nitrogen, you get better experience. But, I mean, I got really great results by that. So there are little tricks that you can do. But to me, the heat treat oven is so much more versatility in what the options you can kind of do. And the difference between the 110 and the 220 is the 220 is just going to be faster.
Yeah,
like the 110 take. I have a 110, and we use it straightly. Now we just use it strictly for the tempering because I only have to go to 400 degrees. But you want to get up to 1950 at a 110, they're gonna take you a while.
Yeah,
boy, and your cord gonna get warm.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, baby. Yeah, it's on an extension cord. Oh my god.
Oh you fuck! Could, it's because those extension cords aren't. Are they rated for the proper amperage you're drawing?
I mean, I don't do that. I don't have them on extension cords now. But back in the day, when I was going through my little garage, I had to rig that shit to the basement. I had a hot cord.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I think that's a really good point, is that it creates a massive step up in your potential for heat treating all kinds of different materials. You know, we got the knife engineering book from Dr. Laren Thomas that has tons of great information, especially heat treating schedules. But you can't heat treat some of these fancier kind of steels on your own, and especially at not out of a forge, if you're trying to like take it up to 1925 without going over, you know, 25, 50 degrees, you're it's not happening. But in a heat treating kiln, you can. And like you were saying, exactly, you can diversify the materials you're working with. And I think that could also make a difference in your sales, so that you're not necessarily maybe just working kind of with, even though basic carbon steels are make great knives, you know, people like all kinds of different steels. And so, yeah,
I wonder if a lot of people, you know, we call those when the austenite doesn't convert to martensite, and this is the first time you're listening to this, you're getting the temperature of the steel up to the critical temperature where the iron carbides go into solution, and then you quench them in the oil, and the iron carbides of the solution is austenite, and then you're converting into crystal structure, martensite. Sometimes the austenite doesn't convert to martensite, and a lot of times you'll see what people are referring to as an autohormone, or these blotchy splotches. And part of me wonders is, I know a lot of it's because of the steel and stuff like that, but I wonder if it's because a lot of people are heat treating out of a kiln or out of a forge, and they're not getting it as even heated as possible.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah, I think that can definitely be part of it. Absolutely.
Because that's a big issue. Yeah. People have that. They're not getting it. They're not getting the whole thing converted over to martensite.
Yeah.
And they're getting the automotive.
It's in the name, people. Even heat. Get a fucking even heat, bro. And I think you're right. I think it's actually supposed to be MRC Customs. But yeah, I'm just going to call him Mr. Customs.
Dude, he should be Mr. Customs. You should be Mr. Customs for now, and that's what I would be. But you know what? We were talking about Dr. Laren Thomas's must-have book, Knife Engineering, and you know where you can get it is MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. It's the one-stop shop for knife makers, steel belts, abrasives, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. They're the Canadian distributor for combat abrasives. They also have all the RhinoWet products that we're going to talk about later. They also have all the steel for the Damascus Invitational. I think it's almost gone. I don't know. You check with him. But if you want to do the Damascus Invitational, you go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, and Lawrence got you squared away. And all the things that you think you need, he will get for you because he's a knife maker. He's also very involved in the knife making community. I had Joyce Cuddy from Cuddy Knives on a full blast, and she just got back from the New England School of Metalwork off the scholarship provided by Maritime Knife Supply. So shout out to those guys. Maritime Knife Supply is the man. Get yourself, if you're in Canada or if you're in the United States, don't matter. Lawrence is with you, MaritimeKnifeSupply.com.
No. Okay. I got a side note about cryo.
Go ahead.
Liquid nitrogen. So you've seen people use it for food, like making ice cream and shit like that, right?
Oh, don't bring up the clam guy.
The clam guy? The oysters?
Dude.
You don't like that?
I got fucking tagged in that shit from our boy Kimon Knives. I think it was a mistake that I got tagged in it.
Oh, for real?
So
wait,
we
like
might as well
guy?
Talk about it. No, it's fine. But I don't have a problem with him. I don't have a problem. So I'm waking up in the morning, and Ben Kimon is in Austria. So he getting on. I mean, he taking. I don't know when he waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, I'm waking up at 4 or something. I don't know what time he's waking up.
He's like 10. He's like 8 hours.
7 hours. Something like this. 7 hours behind. So whatever he's. So I guess there's this video of a guy, and he is saying this is the best way to open up oysters, and he has. A doer of liquid nitrogen. He's pouring the liquid nitrogen over all these oysters. And he says, he's pouring out this doer onto this, you know, hotel pan of oysters. And then he's just like, yeah, 20 seconds, they're all done. And Ben Kimon, who I love, you love. I mean, you don't love Ben Kimon. I mean, he ain't much better than Ben.
What are you doing with yourself?
What are you doing with yourself? He said, he tags me and he goes, any hot takes, Fader? And I try not to say anything bad, but at 5 o'clock in the morning, I try not to write any emails because I usually say something awful. And then I'll try not to go online and say anything because I'll say something awful. I'm not awake. So he tags me in this goddamn post. This dork is pouring a doer of liquid nitrogen over these oysters. And he's saying, this is the easiest way to open up a pile of oysters. And all I could say, I think I said something along to the extent of, $200 plus a doer, that's your price of your oysters just went up. Because, it's expensive. Liquid nitrogen in the United States is expensive.
It is.
And then And then I said it's for, I pay $200 for a 20-liter Dewar. That's what he does. I pay 200 plus. I gotta go down there and negotiate with the guy. I got to go down there on a Monday and try to squeeze myself into 15 gallons, talk myself nice, but I'm still going to pay $215 for this Dewar. This dude's pouring over this Dewar on oysters, and he's saying, and everyone's saying, does this change the structure and stuff like that? And then I said, and frankly, I'm still asleep. I said, frankly, the places you get liquid nitrogen, they don't want to fuck with you restaurant people. I didn't say it like that, but they don't want the welding supply stores who supply liquid nitrogen do not want anything to do with these restaurant people. So, and I don't know why, but like every time I call and I'm going to fill up a Dewar of liquid nitrogen, they say, what are you using it for? And I said, well, I'm a knife maker. Good. This isn't for a restaurant, right? And I said, no, it's not for a restaurant. Welding supply stores don't want you buying their liquid nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. It might be liability. You burn yourself that shit.
Yeah, you can get fucked up pretty bad.
So I may or may not have caused a problem. And then somebody started saying, yeah, your fader knife is right. And you could burn yourself and burn your fingers and it's dangerous. And I was just being like, why are you charging me so much for these fucking frozen ass oysters? Liquid nitrogen oysters. Get yourself a fucking hinge cracker and open up an oyster for Christ's sakes, like everybody else. So that's the answer. That's the long answer to your thing. But so it's all Ben's problem. If I had a problem, I got off of it. I realized I shouldn't have said a word. So
these guys are based out of Seattle. They're like a test kitchen, and all they do is they test out all these kind of modernist cuisine approaches to cooking food for the food nerd at home.
Right.
And I've spent time with that guy and hung out with him a bit.
Oh, well, I didn't mean to be offensive. And you know what? I didn't even say anything offensive.
He's a quirky character for sure. But yeah, I think you're 100%. Like, I think the caption's like, open 100 oysters and all in one go. And it's like, also spend $100 in liquid nitrogen all in 2 seconds. Well,
I mean, dude, that's the crazy part. Liquid nitrogen, it fucking evaporates so quick. You got to like move your ass because it's like all of a sudden you got to. The only reason why we're back to liquid nitrogen is we figured out how much we can get out of a Dewar, because $200, if you're spending $200 on, and it isn't a lot, it's expensive. I mean, I'd be pissed if I ordered a dozen oysters and they're like, that'd be $55, please. I'm like, $55 for a dozen oysters? Why is that? They're like, well, we used 3/4 of a Dewar of fucking liquid nitrogen to open them up because we don't have a fucking oyster shucker. What are you, crazy? Get the fuck out of here.
I wonder if you could achieve the same thing by just popping them in the freezer for like 5 or 10 minutes.
Bro, you know what? You're probably right, but you know what Jacques Pepin does, and I don't know if this is cool or not, but this is what he does. He'll shove a plate of them and shove them in the microwave for 15 seconds.
15
He says it's 15. It doesn't cook them, but it like, I guess it fucking knocks them out.
Zap.
I think it beats, I think it, it's like a fucking, like a baseball bat to them little oyster heads. So, I think you're probably right. If you stuck them in the freezer for a couple minutes.
I'd be curious.
Maybe that would be it. Or maybe, I don't know, because they keep them on ice. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe you got to give them that fucking liquid nitrogen.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because it is going to a much lower temperature, but at the same time, like, I think just being on ice, the ice is usually only from one side, right?
And I tell you, the time that the Voltaggio brothers were furious with me, because I was, a number of years ago, Tony invited me, my business partner invited me down to a Blue Ribbon restaurant down in the city. It was the Voltaggio brothers are, you know, Food Network guys, but I've known Brian since he was a line cook at Oriole. I've known him for a long time. Great guy. Mm-hmm. So they were doing a pop-in cook. It was like an anniversary of the Blue Ribbon restaurant being open. And we went down there. It was sponsored by like Johnny Walker or something like that. So we go down there and they sit me in the front by where they're preparing food, and they're preparing. This was big. They were doing these like making ice cream with liquid nitrogen. So they put me in the front. And I've just been fucking around with my Dewar that I got from Rick Dunkerley, sent me this goddamn Dewar. And I'm thinking, and the welding supply guys are fucking freaking me out about, dude, don't let that liquid nitrogen fall in your car. You know, cookie, it'll reverse cook you. It'll burn your shit. Don't fuck it. And they're telling me all about it and how scared they are that I'm even taking it away and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm down in the city. I just got out of the work. I'm meeting Tony. They're sitting me down. And these two motherfuckers are making liquid nitrogen ice cream 2 feet in front of me, like on a stage where my head is. And I'm just like, I just gotten the whole story of like, this shit is going to kill you. And I'm like, and all of a sudden I turn to me, oh, Jesus Christ, Tony, I'm going to get fucking killed over here. Don't they know how dangerous this stuff is? And I guess I wasn't quiet enough. And then I was just like, don't these motherfuckers know? Don't Brian and Michael know how dangerous liquid nitrogen is? And Jesus Christ, you're going to fucking burn all these people. At the end of the thing, Brian comes up to me and he goes, what the fuck's the matter with you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You're just sitting there heckling them. I was talking to Tony. He's like, yeah, you were scaring the shit out of me. What's wrong with liquid nitrogen? I'm like, you don't know? You can burn everybody up with that shit. This shit is dangerous. And then meanwhile, they're like, you know, like throwing it around like a sprint. You know, they're throwing it all over the place. Yeah. You know, don't fuck around with that liquid nitrogen. Not $200 a fucking 20-pound liter, 20-liter doer. All right, we said it up.
You did it. Ready for another one?
Yeah, of course.
What do you want to do?
Let's go. I love liquid nitrogen off-roading. Off-roading with liquid nitrogen. This is our friend from Instagram, Falcon Knives AK, says, good morning. Bit of a dilemma here. I had a shop who I sold a batch of knives to a year ago contact me and say they're going out of business and was hoping that I would buy my knives back from them. Fortunately for me, it was only a couple knives, so I said, sure thing, to take care of the owner. This got me wondering about future sales. What would you do if this happened, but the total was a few thousand dollars? I wouldn't want to hang anyone out to dry, but at the same time, I can't just go hand out money that I spent months ago. Should I include an agreement in some kind with wholesale batches? Thank you for any input. Kurt Kamiati. Good question. So you've sent out a couple knives. For some reason, you know, shit goes south. They're trying to recoup a little bit of cash. Fire sale, probably. They're doing a fucking fire sale.
Right.
What do you do? You hook them up. You give them money if you can. What do you do?
I mean, hopefully you're in a place where you can just be like, yeah, sure, I'll take them back, and then send them out to your newsletter, and they're gone. That would be like the dream situation, right? But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think he's definitely being a nice guy in this position because it sounds like he sold the knives to them, probably at a wholesaler or a retailer's discount. So maybe 20-30% under what he would normally sell them for. I don't know. You do more like the volume stuff. I know I have for some of my one-offs. I actually like right when COVID's kicked up and things were like slowing down and people were struggling with money and shit like that, I had somebody reach out and they're like, hey, I hate to have to sell this thing, but I was hoping that maybe you could help me like either buy it back or help me find a new buyer. And I'd like to get it cleaned up. And I was like, yeah, sure. And so I helped them with that, got them connected to somebody who was interested in my work, and they bought the knife. And I got another side story about that. But anyways.
Something you could talk about?
The guy ended up being a fucking like a kingpin drug dealer down in Australia.
Oh, shit.
So anyways.
Wait, the guy who wanted to get his money back or the guy who bought the knife?
The guy that ended up buying the knife. So.
Oh, shit. A real kingpin, like a Pablo Escobar type?
Yeah, kind of.
Whoa. Yeah. Did you get to meet him?
No. But he was a very good customer while he was able to buy stuff.
While he was,
it's a good way to launder money, I suppose.
While he was enjoying his freedom.
Yeah. So
is he in jail?
I think he's in jail. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And he was a very nice guy.
Did he come from the Mert Tansu triad? the Turkish drug channel of Australia, Mert Tansu.
Yeah, possibly. That Mert, he's a shady motherfucker.
Dude, you got to be that kind of stuff. You know, when you're dealing with, it's interesting that you say. Laundering money. I don't know if it's laundering money, but it's just like, you get worried about that kind of. I would be like a little bit worried about that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know about it, But then part of me selfishly was like, shit, I should have sold him more knives and charged him more money.
Yeah.
Paid while I had the chance.
Why not? I mean, just because he's a drug dealer, he still has to cook his own food, right? I mean, that, right?
For sure.
You know?
Yeah.
The whole thing's crazy because, I'm not crazy. I made some bread knives strictly for this oven of this bread company that is local because, you know, business is weird. I'm trying to like do other things around the area. We're doing a lot of more local stuff. There's a beer company that around here that I might do something with, and I'm not saying no all the time anymore. And I'm dealing with this bread company, this friend of mine. We become very friendly, and he's buying outright some knives.
Okay.
And is there a chance that he might say, hey, I want to sell these back? I mean, yeah, I don't know what I would say because I also just got the stencil with their name on them. And it's like, yeah, I could buzz it off and make a different situation. But it's a tough spot because that's usually not how things work. You know, like companies don't normally do that. If you're in a situation where all of a sudden it's a good investment, especially if you're selling knives and it gives you the opportunity to have things in stock. That is a good investment because they are your knives and that you are proud of them and that you know that you could sell them again. It's not a big deal, but at the same time, laying out, let's say you have to lay out 2 G's.
Right.
You know, let's say somebody says, hey, I want you to buy these knives back for me. And can you do that? And you got to lay out 2 G's. I mean, that's a big nut too.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And just as you were saying it, I was thinking that exact same thing. Like if it was the bakery guy, you know, maybe they would have bags and like pallets of flour that for whatever reason, like they never got to and say they had to shut down the business. They can't turn around and sell the flour back to the company, right?
Right.
And it's weird that when it comes to smaller businesses, that there's like this expectation. And I don't know if there's like this because there's a sense of familiarity there. Or friendliness, or I don't know what, but there's like this expectation that he can just take him back, and it's like
we're not really LL Bean.
Yeah, we're not fucking LL Bean, Eddie Bauer. We're not fucking Costco. We're not any of that shit, and take that shit right back. They're in a better position to do it than a small business is.
But at the same time, I can also, if I was in a desperate situation where I was closing my business down and trying to liquidate to a certain degree, it wouldn't hurt me to ask, you know, the company saying, hey, listen, here's what the thing. And I could see it not being like being a dick move, being like, hey, this is the actuality of the situation. Is this something you do or not?
Right.
And I'm trying to, I remember something happened. Oh, I mean, I've told this story before. I had knives in consignment in this shop in Manhattan. The company went out of business. The couple who owned it got divorced, and they fucking have my sculpture and they have my knives. So I'm like, it's a couple. It's not the end of the world, but it's just like it was a learning experience. I'm kind of bummed about it. They didn't even pay for them. It was on consignment.
Right.
So it's like
that's kind of the fucking weird thing.
That shit happens. Yeah. That shit happens. I'll tell you another fucking crazy story, and I've said this before. Back in the day when I was selling sculpture, I had a friend who worked at this company called Wild Edibles. I don't know if they're still around anymore, but they had a stall in Grand Central Station. There's like a little farmer's market. It's supposed to be like a French farmer's market. They used to be there, and it was really, really kind of great. Now it's just like ridiculously expensive. And this company, Wild Edibles, I was going to culinary school with somebody who was working there, and then she said, hey, listen, my boss would love it if you had a couple of your lure sculptures in the store. And I went down there, and I'm like, yeah, I could lend you to them. But, I mean, he didn't want to buy them. And he says, yeah, I'll give them back to you when we're done. Have them up here, and every time you stop by, I'll give you some free fish. And at the time, I was just like, what's the big deal? So I lent him I think it was one lure. I put it, and we didn't really have a contract. It was just like, at the same time, I was like, what, 27, 26? I didn't really give a shit. And every time I stopped by, he would be like, hey, let me give you some mussels. Hey, let me give you some tuna. Hey, let me give you a little caviar. Let me give you this. Let me give you that. And then when they sold the company, I didn't know. And They didn't tell me. I didn't know anything about it. And then a friend of mine was like, hey, I was at Wild Edibles. I saw one of your lures there, and I told them about you. And they were like, oh, we'd love to talk to him about getting more. Sent the guy an email. I reintroduced myself. Turns out it was a different company, different ownership and stuff like that. And I'm like, by the way, you know, you want more? I mean, this one was never paid for, you know?
Right.
And then the email, and then I was like, this one isn't paid for. If you want me to take it back or you want to pay for it, and that was it. He just stopped returning my calls, and I felt like he thought I was shaking him down. So, you know, lesson learned in that situation too. But I just remember these kinds of relationships are very strange. I think if I were to do wholesale again, I would try to go with someone who does it for a living, like our friend EDC Gearhouse, or, you know, some guy who's reputable, and then have something in writing saying, I'm getting this back, or no, 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 or something like that. Because I don't know. I'm part of me now, 8 years ago, I would be less hesitant to say, yeah, I'll pay for them back. I'd be like, I already bought my oven with that shit. I don't have them. I don't have fucking 2 G's to give you to buy my knives back. That's not the way it works.
Yeah.
Now I would be a little bit more like, yeah, let's just fucking do it. It's not a big deal, and I'll sell them somehow. Yeah. So I think that the time in your life would make a different decision.
Hmm. Yeah. No, I think so. I mean, yeah. If that happened to me net right now, I'd be totally fine with it. But when I first started, I'd be very anxious about it because it would be a big hit. Honestly.
Yeah, big hit.
But I what you said is totally makes sense. Like, it doesn't hurt them to ask, but you don't necessarily have to say yes, because I don't know. But if you're in a position to be able to turn around and sell them and put them on a newsletter or whatever, fucking do it. Whatever.
That reminds me, I had a guy who bought one of the Cuban knives. When I made the Cuban knives of Carl Ruiz, when he died, I stopped making them. And frankly, I'm glad I did, because I didn't even like him that much. And before he died, I already told him the next
You didn't like
Cuban
the knives that much.
I wasn't into the style. Him, you know? Okay. It's just like everything about him. I made him for a joke for him, and then we made him, and then people really wanted him. And it was just like, and then as time went on, I was just like, I would do this differently if it were up to me. You know, and I had a different model in mind. It was subtle changes that were what I liked. But when he died, I was like, I'm done. I'm not cashing in on my friend's name.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people don't. A lot of people do that, where they cash in, you know, and, you know, all the Ruizing shit. Anytime you see the Ruizing fucking t-shirts and shit, I'm just like, go fuck yourself. I mean, that's like, you want to fucking cash in on your dead friend? That's between you and your fucking maker. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I remember a couple, maybe a year ago, I got a message from a guy who bought one of the Cuban knives. And he says, things change my life, and I'm trying to sell these, and I was wondering if you knew anybody who wanted one. And I said, well, I don't really know anyone who wants one, but thanks for telling me. And I didn't really have anything to say. I really didn't want to get involved, frankly.
Sure.
And then somebody sent me a message saying somebody's selling your knife online for like $2,600. I was like, bro, we sold it for like $400. You know, we made them like $400 or $500.
Yeah.
Something like that. And he goes, yeah, they're selling it for 20. I went to the website. The guy wrote, everything he wrote was incorrect. He wrote the size. He wrote the shape. He wrote the method. He wrote, everything he wrote was fraudulent, with a capital F. You know, like this stuff. And at first I was thinking, this guy wants to fucking this is like ridiculous. Number one, everything he wrote about it was inaccurate, completely inaccurate. Mm-hmm. And so I just wrote him saying, listen, if you're going to write that, here's what you got to do. But then I was just like, I'm backing off too, because like, I'm not fucking helping you try to like squeeze some people. And then as time went on, the price went down and down and down, and he moved it for probably twice what he paid for it. But I was just like, I don't want to be involved with the guy doing a money grab. I ain't interested in that, you know, especially if you don't want to fucking say, hey, listen, I'll hook you up or anything. And I just like, I didn't want anything to do with it. But like, that's the other thing. It's just like, you're on your own. Some of you guys are on your own. But you know what you're not on your own with?
What's that?
Damasteel. Damasteel is the best. I just did a little needlefish shop knife with a piece of Damasteel I had left over. And if you go to damasteel.se, you can see all that beautiful pattern welded stainless steel. This is the future, ladies and gentlemen. This is the future. Pattern welded stainless steel is the future of knife making, because people want to see the colors and people want to see the boom bang and people want the stainlessness. So go get yourself some of that Damasteel. Go to damasteel.se to see what everything's going on. And you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for 10% off. Go follow Carly and all that gang over at Damasteel, DamasteelAB on Instagram. And I don't know how many more pieces of the Damasteel build along steel there is. Maritime Knife Supply has it all, and we're with you. We're with you, Damasteel. Carly, she sends me so many funny messages. Carly, it really is. I just like, you know, goofy shit. It's just like little, you know, funsy stuff. She likes to, you know, play. She likes to play. Carly is fucking terrific.
You want to do another question, or you
want
to?
What do you want? Whatever you want. We have listener feedback. Let's see what kind of listener. We could keep going. That one from Fox River is good.
Yeah, the Fox River is good. All right.
Let's do that one.
This is from Fox River Blades. He says, how would you guys go about naming different models when establishing a brand? Would you rather have a theme like Montana Knife Company using names of wild game animals, or just going with what comes to mind for any given knife? I'd love to hear your thoughts and thanks. You do
Fox
a lot
River's-
of naming.
Fox River is the man. Number one, Fox River is the man. Fox River is, he was in a terrible car accident in a couple, like I think a couple of years ago. And he is wheelchair bound and he's on the road to recovery. This kid is unbelievably cool. And we are 100% for Fox River Blades. Definitely, guys. Don't, if you want to complain about certain things, and this motherfucker is going up on an anvil in a wheelchair. I mean, it ain't got much better than, I mean, the guy's got balls. He got some balls, he's got some inner fortitude, and he got some fucking grit. So we are with Fox River.
Right.
My opinion on naming is different than a lot of people's opinion on naming, because when I was a sculptor, when I was in art school and I was doing all these artists, people would name their paintings Untitled or their sculptures Untitled 4, Untitled, Untitled. And I met this guy who is a glass blower down in Kentucky. His name was Stephen Rolfe Powell. He used to make these incredible sculptural orbs, and they were, you know, blown glass, and there was colors and all this stuff. And he would name every sculpture. And actually, you know, crazy enough, I talked about this before, and Jeremy Spake's brother worked for Stephen Rolfe Powell. Coincidence or coincidences. And so what he would do is he would say the names are as important as the sculptures. And I've talked to other sculptors who are saying that the names are as important. And when you see somebody who writes fucking Untitled, that's some bullshit. That's some fucking weak shit. It's like, you got to name stuff, and the name should be almost as important as the piece itself. So I feel very strongly, I enjoy the naming process, and it's hard too, because especially in the knife game, you're trying to figure out ways in which not to just do what everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel I try to make it about, because we all, you know, Mareko and Craig and I talk about how, you know, creating your own story. I think the naming has to be kind of part of you too. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. I think for me, I don't necessarily have models, but I do have a lot of different patterns that I make my blades from. And every time I make a pattern, I try to name it something that really kind of alludes to or represents or reminds me of whatever it reminds me of. But that way it adds, kind of like you're saying, to that story. And kind of invokes, I don't know, the imagination of whoever might be reading it or might be interested in potentially buying it, and tie memories they have of whatever the name is. Like, so I, like, one of my patterns is the turning tides patterns, because it looks like the shore, like the surf washing in and rolling back out to me. And so part of the idea, I think, for me in regards to naming things is to, yeah, like I said, round out a story or kind of create kind of a story in a way, but also try to evoke kind of an emotional response in a person when they're looking at the thing, rather than it just being an abstract thing, which sometimes has its place. I like there to be a name to go along with it, to have something to talk about in regards to the thing. When I do like a flyover, like one of the things I like doing is I'll just pan my phone camera across the length of the knife, and I'll talk about the different aspects of the knife and the handle material and the pattern, all that stuff like that. But it's kind of like, yeah, again, it's kind of like telling stories and trying to create an emotional connection in a way for people to the work.
So we have to do like almost two names for every, so every right. model has a name, but then the colorways have a name. So Stephen Ralph Powell would name his, he would name his sculptures something the way it reminds him of, something that a way it looks, and then a last name, like a common last name, like Johnson or Smith. So it'd be like Bulbous Orb, you know, Bulbous Orange Johnson. You know, so like everything was very, it was really cool. I mean, it was really cool because they were all the sculptures were very similar and they looked like they were meant to be together, and they all had all these fucking funny names. And I always felt like that was important. So for, we have every model of our, yeah, you got to check out Stephen Ralph Powell. He just died a number of years ago, but okay. He was a bad motherfucker. He did these giant orbs and he would all the names were just like these wild names. And it was always a three word name. And it was really kind of okay. neat. And it really created a vibe. It really did create a vibe. It wasn't just like, oh, to, you know, farting or something. I don't know. I don't know why I said that, but you know what I'm saying? That's the name of this. I don't know if I could do that, dude. Craig, you know what? If I write a name, if I write Ode to Farting as the on the top of this thing, he won't do it. He'll come up with something different. So if you're listening to this, guys, the name of this episode is Ode to Farting, but he won't. Craig won't put it up. Craig won't put it up. You won't listen to that. So so we'll name a model of the knife model. And then I like to name the colorways, the color lab ways that we do, because it gives you this kind of interesting, you know, when somebody wants something, we know, like the funniest name I ever came up with the color lab was, it was blue and there was pink and there was a stripe of yellow and orange and red. And it looked like a jacket from the early 80s for a ski slope jacket, you know, those crazy neon colors.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were like, there was like this candy kind of thing going on and we named it Bubblegum Lift Ticket. And I fucking love that name. That might be my favorite colorway name we have ever done.
Nice.
And then and then I made a knife for Christian Petroni, and I named it Martian Sunrise because the wood was so weird. And then Tony named the Neptune Sunrise just because he was fucking around. And I was like, there it is, Neptune Sunrise. And then we did Cosmic Drift because I was thinking about the Silver Surfer, and it was like this passing by the rings of Saturn, and you're drifting through space. And so I like the idea of coming up with something especially different than everybody else, because it's the knife game's hard, because this guy does the Raven and this guy does the fucking Talon and this guy does the fucking Velociraptor, and you're kind of trying to create these names that are like, you know, people, your customers can like picture what they are, like
right.
a Batarang or something, who the fuck knows, you know, the incisor or, you know, the shark bite or who knows. But it's like, sometimes it's good enough to just come up with a word that is just like, it doesn't have to be on the nose.
Sure. Well, and I think kind of along the lines of kind of what I was saying, like those names like Cosmic Drift, Neptune Sunrise, Bubblegum Lift Ticket, like that when somebody reads that gets their imagination going, and all these different images and things start flowing through their mind. And I, you know, hopefully they're positive things. I think invoking the imagination, or like kind of, I don't know, priming the imagination, getting somebody excited too. And even just being like, for somebody to be able to turn around and say, yeah, this is my Bubblegum Lift Ticket knife. And their friend, like, you know, somebody bought it and they're at their house and be like, what the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah. But a lot of it for me, it's also the tonality of how these words sound. Like,
sure.
I like when words together have a sing-song quality.
Yeah,
so like,
absolutely.
To me, it's like, that's part of it too. It's just how it comes out as well, how it sounds. We were going to call something the fucking, we were doing these sausage knives for these butchers, and they, one end had these two pricks, pricks. There's these fucking pricks. These little pokers that you poke the skin of the sausage, so when it cooks, all the fucking juices squirt out of it. I don't know. It's fucking gross, but, you know, that's the way it is. And we just were going to call it the sausage prick. And we just thought, that's a hilarious name. But it was like, you know, they were calling it the vampire prick. And all these goddamn, and trying to figuring out the right wording. But it was like, part of me also thinks that you shouldn't take it so seriously. Sometimes it's just like, you know, let a thing be a thing.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Trying to think about, oh god, I want to tell you what we're naming, what we've nicknamed the guy who, when we get off this thing, I gotta remind you what I accidentally nicknamed the guy. I have not told this guy what I nicknamed him. Okay. And unfortunately now that's what we're referring to on this project. Okay. You know, I'll never tell. But it's just like, and I know that even on the template it says the nickname, and I'm just like, oh god, I hope he doesn't, he's gonna come up next Friday. I gotta make sure he doesn't.
Yeah, make sure those are
redacted. Well, with that said, let's just talk a little bit about our friends over at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This is an awesome grinder for knife makers or metal workers or woodworkers or something like that. They are fired up because they are giving you what you need, what you might need. And they have different packages. You can buy it put together. You can put together yourself. There are custom packages. There's the max package, premium package, mega prep package. There's different, you don't even have to buy the chassis. You can buy the attachments and you retrofit them onto your other grinders. Mm-hmm. Go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for 10% off everything. Love those guys. Really appreciate their business and also their customer service. So definitely check out what's going on at Broadbeck Ironworks. And I, you know what I was, and I don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about this, but I'm going to say it'd be vague. I got a message from, I think, Ben. Okay. That he reached out to one of the people listening to this podcast after he heard what we were talking about. So might be something good coming along. You never know. Hopefully something nice works out based off the listenership, and Ben and all those guys are great. And Broadbeck Ironworks are a great company. So there you go. Well, you know what? Fuck it. Let's do Speedster Stove. 'Cause he's very rude to me in this next one.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Let's tear somebody's ass up. Craig not here, so let's tear someone's ass off. Speedster Stove, at Speedster Stove says, "Greetings, gentlemen, and you, Jeff." I mean, that's some fun fucking way to start a fucking question. "As I don't make Damascus, and it's expensive to buy in, do you have any thoughts on silver soldering?" That's British terminology. No, it's not, number one. They have silver soldering in other parts of the world, you know, Speedster. Or brazing, a tang extension or a stub of a tang. This would be for a kitchen knife. And at what point would you add the extension? Cheers, Gary. So Gary wants to know about brazing on your tang or brazing on a tang.
I think it's a good move. It's an old move. It's been done for a long time. I think I even mentioned it a couple.
Yes.
A while back.
This motherfucker thinks he came up with an idea. Gary, Gary, what a goddamn ego you have! You thought you came up with brazing? Jesus Christ! Go ahead. Sorry,
I was just gonna say when I was at Dragon's Breath Forge, both Jamie and Peter, but Peter more frequently would they would forge their blades out, and they would just leave a little stump of a tang because they wanted to silver solder a mild steel tang to it, because that not only is that a really strong bond, but it also kind of lends a little bit more toughness to the tang, so that it's not a hardened piece of steel and what is essentially a hard use tool, even though person hopefully unless they really know what they're doing aren't swinging the fucking thing around and hitting anything with it,
right?
But anyways, they still build those swords to be real swords. I think they're called battle ready or something like that.
Nice.
Anyways,
battle ready. Oh my god, I might as well call it a pre-arrest ready. Battle ready,
homicide ready.
I'm going to fucking prison ready. But they're gonna take this away before I get to prison ready.
Yeah,
they're gonna fucking take it away from me, put some handcuffs on me, shove me in the back of a squad car ready.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But I do think that is a good move for the tangs. I'm not familiar with brazing. I'm more familiar with silver soldering, and then silver soldering also comes in a couple different, there's like a soft and a hard, and I think depending on your application you want to choose one over the other. But I think typically for tangs you want a hard solder that's a little, I don't know if it's I think it's a little stronger. of a
bond. I know when we were at, when I was at Florentine Kitchen Knives, he's got a weld on, he's got a weld on some threading to put the pommel on.
Yep, sure.
And there was a knife maker who broke his tang, but not too, I mean, it wasn't hardly anything. And he was on Instagram and he was like, I don't know what I should do. And I sent him a message and I said, why don't you send it to me and I'll just TIG weld on more tang. And I made a keyhole situation where I kind of ground in so it was locked in different ways. It wasn't just like a fillet weld. It was like kind of locked in a couple different methods. And it was more than just a weld. It was like kind of like, it's like a grip, you know?
Okay.
And he said, I never thought about that. I'm like, I mean, it's going to be in the handle and it's a kitchen knife. I can't see this thing breaking. And I've actually done regular welding. I've welded on, I turned a hidden tang knife into a fake full tang knife by welding on like steel around it to make it full tang. And then I welded on the inside to kind of connect it. Once again, I made like little hooks and stuff to make sure that it wasn't going to like snap out. And I hadn't have a problem. And I did it after heat treating too. I kept the blade and the tang very cold. You know, I wrapped it with wet cloth and I made sure that the welds weren't going all the way up. But yes, you solder the fuck out of it. Weld the fuck out of it. You keep the blade cold. I mean, as long as this isn't like, you know, like a Honor Kaglar fucking axe that you're going to fucking hit something with, I wouldn't really worry about it too much.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good move.
Can we beat up Speedster Stoves anymore about this? You know what? The only problem is with the silver soldering question was good, but it was like the Damascus part. I don't understand. I mean, I don't know why that has to do with anything. As I don't make Damascus, and it's expensive to buy in. Speedster Gary, get yourself a piece of fucking Damasteel and knock it off, or go knock on our friend over at one of these supply places. They all have steel. Don't be such a cheapskate. And then attack me, or not attack me, but besmirch me. So, Gary, I'm with you. Please don't respond back. Just leave it. Just take it. That's the end of the story. Just take it. And with that said, if you're going to take something, take it all out with some Red Lines and Dossie USA's Red Line, Rhino Wet. This stuff is dynamite. And if you go to Texas Ferry Supply, you're going to get 10% off of everything if you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10. And I'm under the impression that Texas Ferry Supply is a distributor, Gator Piss. And they're not afraid to say Gator Piss. There's another company. I got to tell you about this when I'm done with this read. So go get yourself some of that Rhino Wet. It's the best stuff around for your disc sanding, for your hand sanding. Stuff lasts forever. Stuff is awesome. I would highly suggest the 220 is my favorite of all the grits. 400 is great. 120, they have a 400, they got 320, they go all the way up to the 1,000 to 2,500. But definitely get yourself some of that Dossie Rhino Wet from Indossi USA at Texas Ferry Supply. Once again, texasferrysupply.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for 10% off. So there's another knife company in the United States that I use all the time, and they send newsletters. And they wrote in the newsletter, we now have Gator Piss.
Okay.
But basically what we've all been saying, like some people don't like to say the name and stuff like that. So they wrote in the bottom of the goddamn thing, and Coy, if you want to get a hold of me, I'll tell you who it is. They wrote, we didn't name it. And it was hilarious because this is your newsletter. And he's like, you wanted it, but we didn't name it. And it was just like this, we're selling it, but we didn't come up with the name. It was hilarious because it was just like they're trying to figure out the right wording and how to sell this shit. And it was so like non-committal. It was so like, we got it because you asked for it, but don't ask us about the name. We had nothing to do with the name. It was really funny. So
funny.
Gator Piss is taking over everybody, whether you like it or not. Yeah. You got no choice. It's steamrolling the knife making community, whether you like it or not.
I'm just realizing on Speedster Stove's question.
Go ahead.
He does say he has a secondary question at the end. At what point would you add the extension? What do you think? I'm guessing it's probably more of a question of before or after heat treat.
Oh, well, I would do it after heat treat.
Yes.
I wouldn't do it. I mean, you're going to fucking have a wreck. You might have especially if you have threading. I wouldn't want to heat treat with threads on anyway, because then you have to clean the threads anyway.
Yep.
And then what point would you add the extension? Yeah, so after heat treat, just keep the shit cold. You know, there are actually welding supplies that keep steel cold. Because when you're welding too, people don't want so much warp. So there's this anti-warp stuff that you can put on to keep stuff cold. Or what I usually do is you get a piece of, a t-shirt or like rags and dip it in water and wrap it around where you need it to be. And it'll kind of keep shit cold. So there you go. Speedster, we took care of you. Let's see. We don't have to deal with it. Well, let's do a couple feedbacks and then we'll get the fuck out of here. This feedback is good. Guys,
okay.
If you want to send us a feedback, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. You can DM us, whatever you like. Try to keep it brief and try not to be too insulting because I'm going to bring it back here and I'm going to feed it back to you. You know what I mean? In like a not as polite a way. The first listener feedback comes from Tyler Young. Tyler Young says, regarding the latest episode, what do you think about putting your name on the handle only of something you rehandle? Okay, so last week, just to set up, saying that a customer or a potential customer wanted me to rehandle their spatula or their thing, but they wanted me to add my logo. And I said, well, I can rehandle the spatula, but I'm not going to put on my logo because I didn't make it. And he said, well, then I don't want it. So if you don't put your name on it, I don't want it. So I was like, okay, well, nice to see you. So he says, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it's like, I mean, it was easy. I mean, it was an easy. I'm not that desperate.
No.
I wonder what point I add my name. I wonder what price point I'd start to, because everybody's got a price to a certain degree. I'm wondering at where I would start to change my tune. But $150, yeah, I can fucking, don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. So Tyler says, what do you think about putting your name on the handle only of something that you rehandle? I agree, putting your logo on the blade isn't great, but on the handle could be something. Just have to come up with a creative way to be consistent on rehandles going forward. I think my Yobi or Shuns put their logo on the pommel end of the cap or whatever that's called. Putting it on the handle. What do you think about that?
I mean, if it's got a cap, maybe, but at the same time, it still feels weird to put your name on the work of somebody else's stuff. I've actually rehandled, like I've made handles for like a sushi chef or something like that. Guy reached out to me to have a handle made for this knife that he won, but the knife was made by like this talented maker from Japan, a few $100 blade, like sushi blade, Yanagiba, and he asked me if I'd make a handle. I made a handle, but I had zero interest or inclination or desire to put my hand, because I'm not, I don't know. I don't want to make my business the handle rehandler business. Now, that if that's the direction, I think maybe if you want to go, if that becomes a thing, like get your work rehandled by so-and-so, like cool. Like then maybe that might be a thing to do. But otherwise,
restoration guys do that. I mean, I know that I think Roy Scott, our friend Roy Scott Vintage Axe Works, I think he puts his name on some part of what he does. He might put it on the handle. I don't know what he puts his name on, but he rehandles these beautiful axes and he'll put his name on there. You know, there are other people who do that. They'll get old things and rehandle them and stuff like that, put their name on them. And
right. But that's what I'm saying though. It's like, that's
their game.
That's his gig, right?
Right.
He's doing the handles.
Right.
He's refinishing the blades and on the heads and all that stuff, but he's not making the heads. He's rehandling them.
Yeah.
And I think that makes sense, but
yeah, I don't know. It's not. If that was my main business, if I was in the rehandling business, I would have like maybe a little mark that said rehandled by Dork Fader, you know, something like that. Well, I think we've done enough. We can fuck around for a little bit and get the fuck out of here. What do you say?
Sounds good.
Did we hit everything? Braunback, Dennis Steel, Maritime, Vince Onsa, come. Of course, got it all.
You did it,
guys. Let's do this again next week. If you want, feel free to send us your messages, your questions, your red flags. Oh, I'm wondering if we have another red flag. We do have a couple red flags, and I'm holding them all together.
Okay.
And red flags are, blah, blah, blah. So send us a message on Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we will see you next week. Bye for now. All Are you watching anything worth a damn?
Let's see. Just while I was traveling. Oh, geez. I just watched this movie that was written by Olivia Wilde and like, the fuck's his name? The guy that keeps kicking Craig out of the ranks. That fuck, Harry Styles is in the movie.
Kicks Craig out of the ranks.
Well, remember when he was trying to like game the charts and stuff like that when he had this town come out.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, Harry Styles.
Harry Styles had like five fucking songs on there.
That's a deep cut. Was it good?
Yeah. No. Oh, I'm just trying to. Oh yeah, it says "Don't Worry, Darling." It's very interesting, and it all like in the last fucking 20 minutes comes together because there's just like I don't know how to describe it exactly, but it was good. It wasn't dark. It wasn't. It wasn't weird like the fucking other one with the kid in the castle and all that shit.
Right.
It's like this dystopian kind of like, and not end of the world, but just like this, or not, sorry, not even dystopian. There was this guy essentially created a utopian society, and there are these, all the men go off to go to work and all the women stay and do the homemaking and all this shit. But there's an underlying layer to it because it's almost like a cult in a way.
Ugh.
It was interesting. It was good. I liked it. I was happy with the ending, and I thought it was interesting for sure. It was good.
We're in heavy NBA playoffs. I'm like totally deep into the NBA playoffs, and we're recording Friday. The Knicks won the first two games of a best of seven series against the Philadelphia 76ers. And it's been very controversial because the reffing has been bat weird, and the Knicks kind of got the refs helped them win not on purpose. The refs weren't really looking; it could have gone either way. The second game, and then last night the Knicks played Philadelphia in Philadelphia, and their main player Joel Embiid, who when everybody says his name is Joel Embiid, every time somebody says his name, it always sounds like Joel Embiid. It's this big fucking dude. It's not Joel Embiid. It's Joel Embiid. He fucking kicked the shit out of the Knicks. He should have been thrown out. He grabbed Mitch Robinson. He threw him down on the ground. He's kicked another guy in the balls. It was like crazy. Oh, it was, madness. Wow. And they all think that, and it was like they won, and he had a 50-point night, which is unbelievable. But it was like, fuck Philly. I mean, respectfully, my friends and I are, well, God bless you all down in Philadelphia, but fuck Joel Embiid. That motherfucker is a villain. He's a villain.
What does AZ say?
She's born and raised in Jersey, so she's with me. She's
all right.
AZ Allison, that's only Allie on Instagram. She's born and raised in North Jersey. And she is on the Fader Knives team, and she's a Knicks. She even wrote one of the things saying, "The Knicks won last night." She's all about the Knicks. She don't give a fuck about the Sixers because she knows how it is. But I swear to God, the sports have been amazing. We've been watching Yankee game. My wife and I have been watching Yankee games. The funniest part is my wife loves sports, but she just wants her teams to win. So the Knicks were head. I mean, it was like back and forth last night, and she's just like, "I can't watch this anymore. I can't watch it anymore. It's too nervous making." I'm like, "Come on, this is the best part. Hell, get your ass in here." She goes, "I can't do it. I can't do it." She ran away. I was like, "Oh, this is unbelievable." Funny. Yeah. So I am fucking deep into NBA playoffs, and I'm texting with Tomer Botner. He's watching it at 3 o'clock in the morning, like a crazy person. And my friend Eric, I went to high school with, we're watching it. We're all three alter cockers are all thinking we're all about 50. Craig, I mean, Tomer a little younger than me, but he's just like, I'm gonna have a heart attack. Every 5 minutes, everybody's like, "I can't take it anymore. These motherfuckers are gonna kill me." So that's been fun. And then I'm trying to think I kind of gave up on. It's so much fun. I'm watching sports, and then especially the Knicks games in the Garden, because I grew up listening to the sports. I mean, Walt Frazier, I've known him for, I mean, he's a Knick fan, just a Hall of Famer. He's great. And Mike Breen, I've been listening to on the radio since I was a child. It's just like, you feel like you know these goddamn guys. And it's like, I know the Garden. And I, you know, we walk around the, when we go to the games in halftime, we do laps around whatever level we're at. And we do, we end up walking a mile. I love it. It's so much fun. So, but we tried watching The Gentlemen and it just got a little bit too much. It's like,
is that a TV show?
Yeah, it was on Netflix.
Is that Guy Ritchie?
Yeah, it's good, but it's just like, all right, here's another guy, and he's weird, and he says things differently, and he's going to beat you up, and it's just like, it's peril all the time. It's like, I can't handle the, like, the fake peril.
I had a first, I just remembered, I'm just looking at my hand, and I realized I had a first at the, when I was teaching the class, and we were doing some grinding on the rotary platen.
What happened?
And my finger got caught between the belt and one of the fucking wheels, the ridged wheels. And thankfully, I didn't get cut or anything. I got a good pinch, and I was able to get my finger out in time. But holy shit, that could have been
like
bad.
It's like driving over your foot with the car, right?
Yeah.
It's exactly what it's like, right?
Yeah. That, yeah, my finger swelled up pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, for a bit, and then it came back down. It came back down by the next day.
I was doing a Scotch-Brite belt once, and I was using the top, and I think the same thing happened. And my finger, my finger went in between the backing of the Scotch-Brite and the slack wheel.
Yeah.
So there was no platen on it, thank God. If I had gone fucking around the whole thing, like,
with
their finger all the way around, it would have a problem. But I'm like, all I can think of is it's just like if your foot gets under a fucking car wheel slowly.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah, I'm too. I just keep looking at it. I'm like, oh yeah, that could have been really fucking bad.
How far did your finger travel? Did it go the top?
No. It only went into the first wheel, and I was able to pull it out. But it got in there and was a good pinch. Like, it stopped the belt. The belt was also super tight. I usually run the rotary platen with the belt really tight. And so it got caught in there, and then it stopped the belt. But then the grinding machine is still trying to turn the wheel, and there's a belt on top of it. I think I actually stopped everything except for the drive wheel. It was just sliding against the belt.
How far was your, how many knuckles were your finger? It was
just the first digit on my
index.
Yeah.
Up to the first knuckle?
No, not even up to the first knuckle. It was like 2/3 of the way.
But of your whole finger?
No. Just my fingertip. Yeah, the first.
So it didn't. Wasn't your entire fingernail wasn't completely in there?
No, my whole nip. Fingernail was underneath. But I was just like pointing at something, and then I wasn't paying attention to how close my finger was, and it just went into the fucking thing.
That reminds me, I saw a video of a guy, a jeweler with long hair, leaning over the jeweler. The jeweler fucking over one of them fucking the buffing wheel. It's a tiny buffing wheel.
Yeah.
Leaning over there, and that fucking grabbed the guy's hair, and it was a small enough grinder that it didn't like pull his head all the way in. But all of a sudden he's like tied up and shit. And they stopped the whole thing, and then he's cutting his hair out, and then they show it pulled a fucking big wad of hair out of his head. And I just wanted to be like, I kind of wish he got a whole fucking spaghettied up into that fucking thing.
Oh.
And the guy was such a dick. Such a dumb thing. The finger thing happens, but the hair, I don't think I can feel sorry for someone who gets their hair caught in that shit.
Oh, because it's like, I'm trying to maintain my like aesthetic.
Yeah.
While still doing cool work or whatever.
Yeah.
Versus being safe.
I want to look like an anime character when I'm leaning over the wheel. I want my eyeballs to be right there and my hair over one eye, and I look like I'm about to be, intense, and then fucking grabs your hair and fucking like a spaghetti fucking wraps your shit around. All of a sudden, you're going from really cool anime guy to like crying terror, a victim.
Yeah, I'm not getting any fucking cool points when I demonstrate or teach anything. I got all my shit on, and I'm like, I look like a fucking goober.
And trust me, I've been alligatored. I mean, alligatoring is when you have the right angle grinder and you have a cup, a wire cup.
Oh, yeah.
and it grabs your shirt and it fucking tries to get up there. Call it the alligator because it fucking starts grabbing your shit and it tries to crawl up. Dude, tries to get your neck. I've got an alligator probably within the last 5 years.
That happened to me like a month ago.
Yeah.
I got
the alligator's bad.
This cast iron griddle, you know, like the big.
Yeah, yeah.
The double, like long one that can go across a couple burners or on your whatever. Anyways, I was cleaning up both sides and I had a little wire wheel on there. And sure as shit, I wasn't paying attention. And my jacket, my work jacket, got just like, wah, 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 got all twisted up in the fucking thing.
What's more virtuous? What's more odious? Getting your hair caught in a buffer or getting alligatored? I think alligatoring is slightly acceptable.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to, like, curse any. If somebody got alligator around here, I ain't going to curse them out.
Sure. Yeah, I agree.
If somebody gets your fucking hair caught in the fucking grinder, you're going to hear about it.
Yeah.
You're going to break your balls.
Yep.
I got to cut your goddamn hair off this goddamn thing. Look how stupid you look now. You know?
Like, you're a sweet haircut.
Yeah, but the sweatshirt is like you've done the damage because your sweatshirt's all fucked up. You probably got a little bit of raspberry stripe going off your old tummy.
No, I got lucky because it was kind of open. I think that was the mistake. My jacket was a little bit open and it just got a little too close and just went right in there.
Yeah, the flannel shirt that's unbuttoned, that's like
exactly
flapping a little bit, that air intake just kind of like sucks it up like a Venus flytrap. fucking grabs you and then it starts to go off you and fucking get you. Guys, we've said enough. Don't let it get you, ladies and germs. Craig, we're calling this Ode to Farts. Ode to Farts or the Venus flytrap. All right, guys, thank you once again. We'll see you next week. Mareko, you're the man. That was a lot of fun. Craig, we missed you. We'll see you next week, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.